I am opening the House Committee on Land Use. Today is February the 7th, 2013, and we have no more committee bills at the moment, so I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2393. And Lynn, do you want to tell us a little bit about it while we get our, I don't know who the first people on the sign-up sheet are, but in a moment I will summon somebody up here and let Lynn talk while you're walking. Ivan and Steve, please. And Ivan, are you bringing more or just yourself? Okay, come on up while Lynn talks.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you have before you House Bill 2393 with the -1 amendments. This has no revenue impact. I did just receive a fiscal report, and it does have a minimal fiscal impact, and we're going to upload that onto OLIS now. This bill would allow up to 1,000 poultry to be slaughtered, processed, and sold as outright permitted use on land zoned for exclusive farm use.
Thank you.
Okay, and sorry, just one moment. That's my bill, but I don't need to testify on it. So why don't you nice gentlemen tell us about the bill?
Thank you. Chair Klem, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ivan Molesky. I'm the policy director for Friends of Family Farmers based in Maloma, Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity in your consideration of House Bill 2393 today. We believe this bill would provide greater economic certainty for small-scale poultry producers across Oregon by clarifying how these operations fit within the land use system. To provide a little bit of background, the Oregon legislature, as I'm sure many of you recall, back in 2011, passed House Bill 2872 nearly unanimously. And that is now ORS 603.038, which would exempt from state licensing small-scale poultry producers who slaughter and sell up to 1,000 birds per year on their own property direct to consumers. This aligns state law with federal rules for small poultry producers. The goal was to reduce the cost of poultry slaughter for small-scale growers and create new economic opportunities in rural communities across the state. It's particularly important in parts of the state that are far from larger state-licensed poultry processors. And it allows small-scale producers to get started without incurring the significant and potentially insurmountable costs of building their own state-licensed facility. Though it was intended to ease restrictions and reduce costs for small-scale poultry producers, the 2011 bill was silent on the issue of land use permitting. This bill would address that and ensure that these small-scale producers can find consistent regulations across the state and avoid potentially high costs and long waits for conditional use permits that may be required. And a conditional use permit, while may be appropriate for larger-scale slaughter facilities and poultry processing operations that have more significant impacts and potential waste issues, it's not appropriate for this scale of processing envisioned in ORS 603.038. This type of processing matches the scale and impacts of other permitted farm uses, typically involving temporary processing stations and minimal waste. And further, the cost and time involved in obtaining a conditional use permit for a small-scale poultry operation would likely make such an enterprise uneconomical, negating the original legislative intent. We have consulted with the Oregon Department of Land Conservation and Development on how to address this issue. We believe that they agree that the small-scale poultry slaughter envisioned in the original bill back in 2011 is consistent with other permitted farm uses and its minimal impact on neighboring communities, waste output, and the size of the infrastructure. So we've worked with DLCD on this bill before you today, and also on the -1 amendment, which we are supporting, which is really, just to be clear, a clarifying amendment. It's the exact same language in the bill. It's just putting it in a slightly different, perhaps more appropriate location in the law, in the land use law. So again, House Bill 2393 is needed to create a certainty across the state for small-scale producers operating under the 1,000 bird exemption. We believe it will help ensure that the legislature's original intent to provide important economic opportunities in rural Oregon will be met. It's also one of the top priorities of the Oregon Grows Partnership, which is an alliance of farm, rural development, local food, and food security organizations who supported 2011's bill and whose collective membership represents over 250,000 Oregonians. Additionally, I wanted to flag for your attention that this bill has received support from faculty within Oregon State University's Small Farms Program who do provide technical assistance to small-scale producers. Included as testimony today is a letter of support for Dr. Lauren Gwynn with OSU's Small Farm Program and the Niche Meat Processor Assistance Network, which in that letter provides some additional explanations for the importance of this legislation. And I'll hand it over to Steve. Thank you.
Chair Clem, members of the committee, I am Steve McCoy representing 1,000 Friends of Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of the Dash 1 amendments. I don't really have that much to say beyond what Ivan just said. We do support the bill. We think that it's a good idea for economic development in rural areas. I'm here to answer any technical questions you may have about it. Thank you.
Okay, so amendment is same language, just different part of the statute. DLCD is here if people have more technical questions about that. Michael Morsi really doesn't want to have to come up here, but he will. Any questions for these gentlemen or about the bill? I'd certainly, since I didn't come testify, I could testify, but they basically said, you know, we did this thing last session, found out there were land use implications, that it wasn't necessarily clear that raising chickens was a farming activity, which is obviously sort of is, but some of these smaller growers, including, I mean, the interesting thing was this young guy that came last time about the original base bill describing what it took to get a USDA inspector on site, and he described how he did it illegally, which was, I couldn't afford the $35,000, so I just did it until I was making enough money that then I could finally afford what it took to have a USDA licensed facility, which is not normal to admit breaking the law here at the legislature, but it happened. And I think he was, by the time he was talking to us, he was making enough money that he was licensed and all that kind of stuff. So then we find out in the interim we're back in the position where new first time people wanting to use it are looking at now a pretty significant land use process, some fees and other things to use what we thought we were trying to make easier for people to do. And that's where you get this bill from. Isn't that right? That's a question, because I'm supposed to be in
question. Well, that is correct.
Oh, yeah.
And I would say that for some of these small-scale producers, this may be an economic opportunity that provides them some capital so that they could perhaps have a larger operation that could be subject to licensing in the future. So this is a real opportunity.
Yeah. Okay. Any?
Mr. Chair?
Yeah. Davis.
Could you just broadly address what the general cost would be for a conditional use permit and the time involved?
It's a good question. I would actually defer that to Steve a little bit. I think it's
it's going to be highly dependent upon the county. Different counties, it's going to be a different amount for the application. Chair Clem, members of the committee, Rep. Davis. It's going to be highly dependent upon the county. Different counties charge more for the permit. Permit fees can be highly variable between counties. I can't really throw a number out there. Sorry.
And we'll definitely be getting this in some other bills where we're trying to subject them to conditional use permits, and people would be more than happy to describe what that process is like and why they don't want to have to go through one. You want me to see if I can fish someone from the audience up to describe that further, maybe?
Yeah.
Anybody out there that wants to take a stab at conditional use permit processes in?
Mr. Chair.
So you have to come. Yeah. I unfortunately can't just yell like I did and you yell back.
Only we can do that.
Representative Clem and members of the committee, my name is Nellie McAdams and I'm with Friends of Family Farmers. A permit can cost, along with the associated fees and the research done into it, and all the associated costs can cost well over $1,000. And some of the conditional use permits might cost around $350, but the fees associated with it can run in excess of $1,000.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, follow up.
And the time generally involved in obtaining that conditional use permit?
That is... I have a little bit more difficulty speaking to that, because that's also highly variable depending on the county and the staffing, but several months at least.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
This is, I think, a relatively easy one.
Yeah.
Like talking about Willamette Valley Vineyards, when they got theirs for that kind of operation, it was not, $1,000 in several months. It was probably tens of thousands in several years, would be my guess.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions for these folks? Okay, then you're released. And I think what I will do, do we know if Representative Johnson's going to be...
We have tried reaching, don't think so.
May not be coming? Why don't we recess for a moment and let me check into that. So let me just recess for a moment. So for the moment, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2393 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2441 and invite our colleague and its chief sponsor, Representative Johnson, up to tell us about this fine piece of legislation. My name's on it, so I hope you've gotten us in good shape here.
Chair Clem, members of the committee, Mark Johnson, State Representative for House District 52. Thank you for having me here today and hearing this bill and bring it up for a hearing. So I'll just tee it up for the folks that will be behind me who know a lot more about the issue and can explain it much more fully than I. But basically, it's an issue with our small woodlot owners and so forth where there is a need for facilities or some sort of construction to be built that can enable them to carry out their methodologies for harvesting timber, for managing their forest lands, and so forth. EFU land, or forest land as I understand it, currently has some provisions that make that difficult to do. Now, if you're on exclusive farmland, i.e. you have an orchard, as Chair Clem would understand, you go down to your county building department, you say, I want to put up an ag building, and they give you a permit to go do that. It's basically a notification process. It's very clean, simple, and you put up an ag building for whatever ag purposes you may need to manage your farm, whether it's pears, apples, cherries, wheat, whatever. On forest, it's not quite so easy to do, and that's where we have the, that's what the bill is about, is trying to provide that same sort of ability for landowners who have land that's zoned exclusive forest and not exclusive farm. So again, this is, as we know, regarding our natural resource industry in Oregon, our private timberlands really are... Our private timberlands really are where the lion's share of our timber is being produced and our fiber is being produced in Oregon these days. So this bill could be a real asset to help many of those private owners continue to manage their forests, to have a place where they can safely store equipment and so forth. They don't have to move it in, move it out all the time just because of there's no place to adequately store, secure, or just keep those things on site that can help them in their administration of their land. So... So I appreciate you having the time to hear this today, and Roger Beyer will be coming up, who represents the small woodlot owners, and I think he has some friends with him who can tell you firsthand what the need is. I would say that the impetus for the bill actually comes from a constituent in Hood River County who went ahead and built a building on his exclusive forest land, and then the county building department discovered that and said, oop, time out, we've got a problem here. So that is processes in hold while we await for this process, legislative process, whatever it may be, to run its course. So appreciate your time and your consideration of this measure. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, and thanks for leaving committee to come over. And so let me call up Jim James, Gordon Culbertson, and Roger Beyer.
Thank you, Chair Clem and members of the committee. I'm Roger Beyer, here representing the Oregon Small Woodlands Association today. In front of you is House Bill 2441, and Representative Johnson did a good job of just basically describing the bill. I'd like to, for those, the two members here who also serve on the House Ag and Natural Resources Committee, what this bill is about, if you recall when I spoke on both this morning and on Tuesday morning, about parity between ag and forest land uses. And this is one of the issues that I was speaking of. As you heard from Representative Johnson, if you are an exclusive farm use, an agricultural building is an outright permitted use. You go to your county, you let them know that you want to build this building, and you can build it. But in the forest zone, it's a conditional use. You have to go through the entire building provisions. You have to go submit a land use application. You have to, subject to notice, subject to hearings, subject to fees, and the counties have the right to say no for those buildings. What we are asking for is parity with the ag buildings, and it's important to note that in that parity, this bill, and I'll get to that in just a moment, but in that parity is if you are going to put any sort of electrical or plumbing into these buildings, these agricultural buildings, that gets you out of the exempt status. If you are going to put electricity or plumbing in the buildings, you have to go get permits for that. That's the public safety issues and human health safety issues. So this mirrors that identically. So what these buildings are for, and you'll hear more from my colleagues, but it's about forest land owners who have pieces of equipment that they typically want to leave on their woodlot. Many forest landowners don't live in their small woodlots. They live somewhere else, and they commute to their woods when they do to do some stuff. And if they've got a cat or a, excavator or an ATV or something like that they use in their forest management activities, many times they have to truck these back and forth with them because of vandalism problems and things like that. Another common use for these buildings would be fire trucks. Many forest landowners want to have a fire truck on the property, but it's just it doesn't work many times with our neighbors in the forest to leave pieces of equipment like fire trucks out in the open where people can get to them. Well, if you can lock them into a metal building, they would be secure, and you could leave them there. So that's basically the bill. I'd like to talk about how this bill is constructed and point out that there very likely needs to be an amendment to make this bill work. I'm not a land use expert, but Section 1 of this bill is intended to be the land use section of the bill because, as I said, it's a two-step process. There's a land use process and then a building permit process. Section 1, so you need both of them, just like you heard in the bill prior to this that you passed last session when you pass a bill, but you forget about the land use side of it. You've missed a step for the small operators. So Section 1 is intended to be the land use section of this bill to say that these buildings, these agricultural buildings, are permitted in forest zones or farm forest mixed zones. I I'm not entirely sure this gets at what we need. I think it does, but it may need to be clarified by making a statement to something about the fact that this section will be added to Chapter 215 or something like that, so the Legislative Council would put it in the correct chapter so everyone would know this is a land use section. So having said that, I'm looking forward to hearing from the experts in the room on land use to maybe clarify that for us if that is needed. The second section of the bill is the building code section. And this is the section that states that these buildings are exempt from certain building codes. And all this does in this section is it adds the forest operation, forestry, or forest products to the areas of permitted use to make it legal. You can't just take a ag building, stick it in the forest zone, and then have to use agricultural practices in order to legalize it, because we don't do agricultural practices in the forest. We do forest practices. So that's what this section does, and as far as I know, that section is correct. That section needs no clarification, but I look forward to hearing from experts if there are needs to be additional clarifications to Section 1 of the bill. So with that, I'd like to introduce my colleagues and let them talk about real-life experiences in this, and then be happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chair. Right.
So I don't know which one's Jim and which one's Gordon.
I'm Jim, and I'll go,
okay,
I'll go
please.
Next. Yeah. Thank you. Chairman Clem and members of the Land Use Committee, thank you very much for giving me an opportunity to testify today in favor of House Bill 2441. My name is Jim James. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Small Woodlands Association. Getting the authority to build a pole building on forest land has been a priority for my organization for over a decade, and it spurs from an inequity that with ag lands who can build pole buildings. We have members who own property adjacent to farmland. Their neighbor can build a pole building without too much fanfare, and our member had to go through a long process in Washington County. He was able to build the building he wanted, but it cost him an arm and a leg by his terms, and was a lot more challenge the same building. And so we were hoping that we can get some equity with ag lands. As Roger mentioned, small woodland owners typically do not have enough forest land to justify bringing in contractors to do road maintenance, to do salvage logging, to do some smaller logging. Having their own machinery is very common. Most small woodland owners have a small cat, a small tractor, some form of equipment to help them manage their forests. And very few of them have an opportunity to park that piece of equipment on their property. We do have a member who owns three parcels in kind of the same general area. One of them he acquired prior to the land use laws in the 70s, and there's an old barn there, and that's where he parks his equipment. Unfortunately, that's the piece of property that requires the least amount of equipment, and he spends all of his time moving that piece of equipment back and forth to the other two parcels. And if he had the option, he would build a pole building on one of the other parcels and avoid that cost. We also have members who have had equipment vandalized and stolen because they didn't have a proper place to store their equipment. And so I guess the rest of my testimony was going to pretty much repeat what Roger said, so I'm going to stop there. But this is really important to our organization. It's really important to small woodland owners. And what we're looking for is equity with landowners who have their land zoned as ag land. Forest land is zoned as forest land, so we have limited things we can do with our forest. One of them is manage them for forest, but having a structure on the facility to help us do that would be very, very advantageous. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. Gordon?
Good afternoon. Representative Clem and the committee members, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you today. My name is Gordon Culbertson, and I'm a resident of Lane County and a small woodland owner. Our family business, Whitewater Forests, owns and sustainably manages about 120 acres of forest land in Lane and Douglas counties. Our primary business is to grow and harvest commercial timber for sale to the local forest industry. Both of our tree farms are certified under the American Tree Farm System.
To perform our business activities, we own a small amount of equipment and vehicles, including a small crawler tractor, a quad all-terrain vehicle, a water tank, and pump trailer for forest fire protection. We have a considerable investment in this machinery, and we try hard to maintain it in good working order. An important part of that care is protecting it from inclement weather. This machinery is used exclusively on our forest tracts. Our forest land is located a fairly long distance from our home place. Because of logistics involved in moving the machinery, during the winter season, we prefer to leave it on the tree farms where we use it in the course of our business. In an effort to protect our machinery, I recently investigated the purchase and construction of a simple pole building to give us a dry and secure place to park our machinery. I decided that our tree farm located on Penn Road in West Lane County would be a great place for this small structure. I inquired with a local company who quoted me a price to produce and deliver a well-designed, prefabricated building kit that would meet our needs. The wood building would be 20 by 24 feet, supported with poles and protected with a metal roof. No electrical or plumbing, just a small covered garage with a gravel floor. They recommended a contractor available to help me put it up, and the price sounded like a reasonable investment. I was really pretty excited to get going on this. I had known that there was an exemption to allow for agricultural structures not requiring a building permit, but I wasn't sure about forestry, so I inquired with Lane County. Quite soon, it became clear that my small, simple structure to protect my forestry machinery wasn't going to be simple after all. For my building to be constructed, I discovered the following. Yes, we would need a building permit because it's not a farm building. The structure would be treated as if it were for human occupancy. An engineering building specification would be required. A pre-inspection meeting, either by an on-site visit or possibly a photo review, would be necessary. A site plan review and permit review meeting with county officials would have to be scheduled. A fuel exclusion area for fire prevention, just like a home would require, effectively forcing me not to grow any young trees, may be within hundreds of feet surrounding this building. Two copies of a site plan drawn to standard engineering requirements on 11 by 17 sheets would be required. I would need a building permit application form, including the site plan, two more sets of plans, including an engineering analysis, a foundation plan, a floor plan, cross sections and detail, an elevation view, a floor and roof framing plan, wall bracing, engineering calculations, and truss specifications from the manufacturer. Also, my building kit that I had made arrangements with the local company likely would not be suitable because, as the county told me, it's for farm use, but forestry is another thing altogether. A fee of $350 would be due at the meeting, and this was in addition to the previous fee of hundreds of dollars for approval of a site plan. And then lastly, county zoning restrictions may prohibit my pole building entirely, and if my building is rejected, none of these fees would be refundable. Well, after considering these requirements, it quickly became clear my simple building was not to be. It turned into a lose-lose situation for everyone. There would be no building to protect our machinery, neither the local company that makes and sells the building kits, nor the building contractor would have the business. Oregon lumber wouldn't be sold and used to construct a quality building. And I think how ironic that it was virtually impossible for a structure made mostly of Oregon wood products to be built on a forest farm where trees are grown specifically to make these wood products. As we speak, my water pumper trailer that I own and maintain for the purpose of protecting forest resources during the summer fire season is rusting in the rain. Small woodland owners perform an important and crucial role in the management of Oregon forest lands. Many sawmills rely on timber produced from our woodlands. We enhance wildlife habitat, water quality, and recreational experiences. Farmers and foresters share a common long-standing goal, making a significant economic and environmental contribution to the state. Agriculture and forestry are very much the same process with planting, growth, stewardship, and harvest. Each requires an investment in tools of the trade to be successful. A reasonable expectation is that similar business endeavors would be treated equally. House Bill 2441 offers an equitable solution to treat farmers and foresters on equal footing when it comes to practical and reasonable storage for our tools. I urge you to give it your support, and thank you for your consideration.
Okay, any questions for this panel? Well, good work. Apparently left him speechless.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And then Ian Tolson from the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation.
You didn't put federation on there. I just want to note it is a federation.
We are federated.
I wanted to note that.
Thank you.
And you dress about as well as your predecessor. You guys are kind of fashionable over there.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Good afternoon.
For the record.
Chair Clem, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ian Tolleson with Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. There's not much more I can say after that thorough explanation of the bill. We are in support of it. A lot of our members do run into the same issues that were explained with the difficulties of getting a structure on farmland. So we are in support and appreciate your support as well. Thank you.
Any questions? It's pretty, I think it probably evoked quite a few, but
no,
inspiring.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. So I've done let me close the public hearing on House Bill 2441, and I've done a little investigation here, and it appears we do need an amendment to place it in the land use chapter appropriately, so there's not another bill next session about what the land use ramifications are. So I will, I haven't done this in 2 years, carry over the bill? Forgotten. Do I carry over a bill? I'm not in a work session.
Just do the here.
I forgot. Carry over the bill. So I'm going to carry over House Bill 2441. Sorry, I'm a little rusty. And I am going to open a work session on House Bill 2393 and ask my good Vice
Chair. I'll move the -1 amendments to House Bill 2193.
Representative Cameron moves the -3 amendments to House Bill 2393. -1 amendments.
Did I say -1? You said -3.
I did. -1. There's only one, sorry.
That's what I thought.
-1. And Representative Frederick asked a question about some language being added by the amendment, and the question is about the biofuels. That's existing statute.
That's existing statute.
Yeah. The part that is new is the or an establishment for the slaughter, processing, or selling of poultry or poultry products pursuant to ORS 603.
I just wondered whether that was new or not. That's fine. Thank you.
No, we're not slipping any biofuels in the name of poultry in today. They produce some, I'm sure, but
any annexation in there?
Nothing.
Yeah, there's an annexation part down the bottom. Just don't look. It's fine. Don't worry. It's great. Any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? If not, the amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair, what number is it?
2393.
Yeah, 23. Mr. Chair, I'll move House Bill 2393 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
I'm thinking about the other one still. Representative Cameron moves House Bill 2393 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? If seeing none, the clerk will please call the roll.
Representative Davis.
Aye.
Representative Holby.
Aye.
Representative Patrick.
Aye.
Representative Unger.
Aye.
Vice Chair Cameron.
Yes.
Vice Chair Frederick.
Yes.
Chair Clement.
Aye. And motion passes. And we should let Representative Johnson carry his bill, though it would be good to give this one of our bill. Freshman members.
This bill.
This is my bill. So how about one of our, wait a minute.
Yeah.
How about one of our two, let's, I don't have a coin to flip. Representative Unger, I think you would like to carry.
I would be honored to carry
a bill. Yeah.
It's important to have a freshman carry a bill early in session.
I really appreciate it.
You may have heard something about that.
Yeah.
Okay, so the other one we've carried over. Any other discussion items for the committee today? We're going to be done really early. Let's make a habit of this. Okay, seeing none, I'm going to adjourn the committee.